What is going on, everyone? Welcome to A Theology of Hustle. I hope it was a great Easter. I know I had a great Easter. I took off Holy Week last week, but I am back, and this is episode 49, and I am talking to Cody. So Cody, I met on the internet. I'm a member of a guitar player praise and worship Facebook group, and I ran across Cody, and the reason that he stuck out to me is that he is the owner of a business called Westminster Pedals and also one called Nose Pedals. And so I play electric guitar at our church, and the world of electric guitar is this like really interesting world. It's all based around sort of your rig, right? And so like having the right guitar and the right pedals and the right amplifier can drastically change how you sound, and people spend a lot of money on guitar pedals. And Cody is firmly in that world as a business owner. He makes these guitar pedals that make your guitar sound like, you know, all sorts of different things. They can make it sound a little more distorted or crunchy, or, you know, give it some delay where there's repeats and all that stuff. And so he owns this pedal company, and I figured I had to talk to him. So this episode is all about us nerding out about guitar and theology. So it's kind of a double there. You get both things in this episode. He's just a really cool guy to talk to. I think he has a real passion for worship, but also bringing theology into that worship. And I think that's a really important thing. He's also a podcaster. And we talk about podcasting. I really think you're going to get a lot out of this episode. He did not intend on starting a pedal company when he did his education in journalism, but you know, God had just amazing things for him and had a different road. And this episode really shows that story of how God, you know, moved him along to the place he is now, a place he never thought he would be. I think it's really cool. It's cool how God uses us in ways that we just never imagined. And so, yeah, you're going to love this episode. I'm super excited for you to hear from Cody. Make sure, though, while you're thinking about it, to go ahead and rate and review me on iTunes or wherever you're getting this podcast. Just helps get the word out about A Theology of Hustle. If you want to stay up to date with what I got going on, you can follow me on Instagram and Facebook at Theology of Hustle. Make sure you do that. You can see all my guitar gear there as well. I make sure and update that too frequently. So yeah, I hope you enjoy this episode with Cody. I'd love to hear what you thought. I'd love to hear what you got out of it. So let me know via social or email or whatever, and I hope you enjoy this episode. All right, Cody. Well, thanks so much for jumping on with me, man. It's super nice to meet you and get some time to chat a little bit.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Yeah, dude. Let's jump off and just have you introduce yourself to everybody.
Yeah, so I am Cody Fields. I am the president of Noseminster LLC, which involves both Westminster Effects, which I started in 2015, I believe, and then I acquired Nose Pedal 2 years ago, so 2017. Is that right? Really? Yeah, I don't know.
I think.
Yeah. I don't math. I don't numbers. I words. I have a journalism degree, so. I've lived in Lyman, South Carolina my entire life. You know, went to a small Christian school. Actually grew up, a lot of people will find this terribly ironic, I actually grew up in the Church of Christ. So total a cappella, in terms of the worship, and you know, we can talk distinctives another time. But
I have interaction with the Church of Christ, actually.
Oh, really?
Texas. Really? So, yeah. My wife went from Texas.
Texas.
So my wife went to Abilene Christian University, which is, you know, a Church of Christ school.
It is. So, yeah.
Yeah.
Very interesting.
Anyway. Yes.
So you also have Harding University in Arkansas,
yeah, right,
kind of near you. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so right. I grew up in the Church of Christ while also attending a small Christian school here in Greenville. So that exposed me to other Christian perspectives. I had Baptist, Presbyterian, Methodist, mm-hmm, friends, whatever. And then I went to North Greenville University, which is a small Southern Baptist school about 25 minutes north of Greenville, as you could guess, because it's called North Greenville. So got a journalism degree there, and it was in college where justification by faith alone really kind of clicked with me. I also graduated at the exact wrong time. Not only did I graduate in 2009 in the middle of the recession, I graduated with a journalism degree,
right,
which was right when everybody was like the New York Times, LA Times, Washington Post, whoever, everybody was like, we forgot how to make money. What do we do? Everything's online now. Nobody right. buys newspapers. So I had to work survival jobs, and actually met my wife through one of those survival jobs and being in a band and all that. We can get into that later if you want. But eventually ended up working at an advertising agency in Greenville. That went south and very, very toxic. And I quit that with the intention of going freelance with blogging and social media management and all that kind of good stuff. And in the meantime, I've always been a DIY guy, and I've always loved guitar gear and all that kind of good stuff. So I got a General Guitar Gadgets Blues Breaker pedal kit, and I put together an overdrive pedal, and I was like, that was fun, and I can make money off of this, and I have ideas. and that's how Westminster Effects was born. I have a passion both for music and for proper theology and actually talking about the things of God and all that kind of stuff. And I don't know if you've noticed, but the theological state of modern worship music is kind of a dumpster fire. It's partially to counter that, and it's partially to kind of showcase, hey, like, we have 2000 years of family history,
right,
and there's a lot of legit stuff that you can read literally for 2000 years.
Yeah.
And so let's look at these guys. Let's see what they said about God in relation to scripture and celebrate that while also sounding good.
Yeah.
as weird of a combination as that is.
Yeah. No, I definitely appreciate that. I and that's why I was drawn to your stuff. You know, I have a degree in historical theology, you know, and so,
oh, awesome.
Like, that stuff really, I'm like, yes, very much so. Let's talk about that stuff. And I totally agree with you, like, bringing that worship perspective into, you know, a theological perspective. So I definitely want to get into that. Let's start though. Can you explain to people out there exactly what a guitar pedal even is, or why you build them?
Yes.
Is that too big of a question to start off with?
Not at all. So a guitar effect pedal, or a guitar effect, or a guitar pedal, whoever you're talking to, or a stomp box for that matter. If you've ever watched really almost any guitarist perform, they'll have these little boxes that they'll step on, and that will change how it sounds. So if you look at like Jimi Hendrix's Woodstock performance, and he's playing Voodoo Child, and you've got that wow, 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 wow. Well, that wow is from a wah pedal. He was using, I think, a Dunlop Crybaby at that point, maybe a Vox. I don't know. But so you've got stuff that will change, you know, modulation. You've got stuff that will give it more grit or distortion. You've got stuff that will even out dynamics, or you've got stuff that'll make it sound like you're flying at 30,000 feet and be all kind of ambient and airy and all that good stuff. So if you can think of something to make your guitar sound like, there's a way to do it, whether it's pure analog or whether you get into digital processing type of stuff. So it's a huge world. It's the market is technically oversaturated with one man shops like myself. But at the same time, the market's still growing. It's a really interesting industry.
Yeah. Well, can you talk about that a little bit? Because I think I'm just now getting my head wrapped around how big of a market it actually is, and how worship driven the entire like pedal market almost is in a lot of ways, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. You look at companies like Strymon, where they make basically supercomputers for stuff like delay, which for those who don't know guitar, it basically you play notes and it repeats the notes in time for a certain, you know, and you can change the lengths and how loud the repeats are and stuff like that. So delays and reverb. And like, I'm pretty sure the worship industry keeps them afloat just by selling their delays and reverbs.
Yeah.
So you've got stuff like your hand-built stuff, or at least used to be. I don't know what they're doing now that they're huge, like stuff like JHS and Wampler, where they're relatively small shops still, but they've only been in business 10, 15, maybe 20 years, as opposed to some of the huge guys that you'll see all over Guitar Center, like Boss or Electro Harmonix. I actually met the Electro Harmonix guy at NAMM this year, and it was pretty awesome.
Really?
Yeah, he was a pretty cool guy, just sitting there with a cigar in his mouth, and people would come up and get pictures with him. And you could tell that he had been chewing on that cigar for at least 3 weeks. It was kind of gross.
But Electro Harmonix, I mean, they were like some of the first to the game.
The founder's name escapes me right now. I'm just brain farting because I hadn't planned on talking about Electro Harmonix. But the way he started the company was the best sounding guitar amps, by and large, are driven by old vacuum tube technology, like what you see in old radios. Right. It's kind of one of the weird backwards things about guitars. And the founder, noticed that a lot of guys really wanted more gain, more distortion out of their amps. So he made a booster pedal basically to increase the volume of your guitar as it gets into the amp, which overloads or overdrives those tubes and gives you more distortion.
Right.
And so that set off an entire chain reaction, for 50 years of, well, if I can do this, well, I can do this other thing too, right? And so it's just gone ballistic.
Yeah.
And right. So now you've got guys who will wire like in super old school ways, like the point to point, like not even having a circuit board. They'll have like a turret board or something like that. Or you've got like basically supercomputers where everything you could want is in this one huge thing that's, I guess like 2.5 feet wide and literally program it to do what you want. So it's really interesting time to be in the guitar world right now.
Yeah. And it's exploded over the last, like you said, like 10 to 15 years, probably, where these boutique pedal builders are coming in and so can you explain why that is, like from a worship perspective, and how worship electric guitar specifically fuels that
flames. in the worship wars of the late 90s, you really saw more of a kind of a pop rock influence on praise and worship music. And in my opinion, the genre is irrelevant as a, in regards to how God is worshiped. God has commanded how he wants to be worshiped. Like that is true. Yeah. But whether it's a traditional hymn, Gregorian chant, Scandinavian death metal, what have you, it's not about the genre. So when these more modern aspects of music started to be incorporated, a lot of guys like The Edge of U2 were really influential in that style. So it was, how can I sound like that? Well, dotted eighth delay, a little bit of reverb and a little bit of overdrive. And then that turned into gain stacking, where you don't have just one distortion or overdrive pedal. You can set both of them pretty low in terms of their overall saturation, and then use them at the same time and get an entirely different texture. Well, what if I do that with three or four?
Yeah.
And there's actually been times when I've used five at one time just because I can, and because I build them, so I can justify having all those on my board at one time. Yeah.
So you've had five game panels running at this, or, drive.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. Time? Well, technically, let me see. Wow. Technically six. Because I've got one that's an always on, that's a little preamp boost thing. And then with my clean boost, and then the four overdrive circuits I keep on my board. Yeah, when we play, I know the song's a little bit controversial, but when we play What a Beautiful Name at my church, when it really hits that you have no rival, you have no equal, when it gets really big, I'm running a delay and three reverbs and all six of those drive circuits. Like it gets,
what?
I'm having fun on that part. And especially because you're playing amazing. Octaves, and it's basically a tremolo picking, and I feel like my arm is about to fall off by the end of that song, because you do it for like a minute and a half straight, and then like I might need Tommy John by the end of my guitar playing career. I don't know. for those of you who understand a baseball reference,
but, right? That's incredible. So how many pedals do you think a normal electric guitarist, like an average one, would probably have on a board that they're using for worship music?
Yeah, I'm really glad that you clarified for worship music, because it really depends on the genre, you know, because like I'm pretty involved in the metal and hardcore scene in Greenville, which isn't a very large scene. But you know, like most metal guys, you know, they'll have an overdrive because they're probably getting their distortion from their amp, and they're just trying to push that a little more and tighten it up, you know, so they might use a compressor, but man, there's no telling for worship stuff, because you're probably going to need a delay. You're probably going to need some kind of reverb. You're going to need some kind of overdrive. Those are really your basics. And then you just build from there. So it's how many flavors of overdrive do I want? Or there's some guys that like to control how distorted their signal gets by how hard they play. I don't have that kind of control myself. Like I'm a mid 2000s pop punk and emo kid at heart. So I'm just going to wail. I'm just going to play. So I rely more on pedals to get that dynamic, where some guys, you know, like to reference a more famous guitarist like Joe Bonamassa, he really doesn't use a ton of stuff that I'm aware of. So he really relies more on which pickup and how hard he's playing and that kind of thing. You're looking at least three, but there's boards of upwards of 25.
Right. No, they get insane, don't they? Right.
Oh yeah, some of them. It's like, dude, that costs more than my car.
Well, it's not hard to do. You throw a couple Strymon pedals on there, and you're getting pretty close, like off the bat, right?
Right. And a lot of people, I will say this. There's some people that are like, oh, well, why would you drop $400 on this one pedal? Well, it's a supercomputer, effectively. And when I like with delay settings, like I use the same setup for my metal band as I do for church. And when I can have presets for every single song, sync it up on with my computer, like I can plug it up to my computer, store the stuff I'm not using there, you know, and all that kind of stuff, that's absolutely worth it for what I'm trying to do. Right. Maybe it's not for you.
Right.
That's what the free market's for.
Right. Totally. That's interesting. Okay. But something I want to talk about too is like how worship music has changed. So when you see an average worship band, right? Like let's say we're at a big church, right? There's an acoustic guitar player with a microphone, probably, you know, a couple of other people on microphones, and there's one to two electric guitarists. And I think the sense, I guess, for most people is that acoustic guitarist is sort of doing a lot of the work, since he or she is the leader of the band. Right. But most people don't understand that most of the sound that comes out of that band is keys and those two electric.
Absolutely.
Guitars.
Yeah.
True.
Absolutely. Yeah. Acoustic guitar has really kind of become another percussion instrument in modern worship music. And sometimes, especially at like my church, we average about 200 adults in a service, so we're not enormous by any means. I mean, technically above average in terms of average church size in America.
Right. Yeah. Like double average.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, like there's times where, you know, our guy who's usually on acoustic and usually leading vocals, he'll just stop playing. And we make fun of him for it all the time, where he'll get into it. You know, maybe it's a bigger part of the song. Maybe he'll raise his hands and he'll just not play. He'll still sing, but he'll just stop. So yeah, a ton of what you're hearing is keyboards with their big synth pads, and then whatever the electrics are doing. And there are some really nice guitar tones out there for sure. And there's a wide variety of them, whether you're talking about like these big searing lead lines, or whether it's like on a down chorus or something, or a bridge or whatever. And you've got tons of reverb, and you can pretty much make your guitar sound like a synth with how much of a wash you put into it.
Right. Yeah, it's crazy because in effect, the guitar is one instrument and the pedalboard is maybe pedalboard and amp are a second instrument in a lot of ways.
Like yeah, that's a really good way to put that, actually, because and especially because you can get totally different sounds out of different amps and right. and your pedals will react to different amps. Or I guess your amp will different amps will react differently to your pedals.
Right.
Where
right.
I, you know, at church, our church owns a Vox AC15 where I used to have an AC30 and I guess downsized in terms of size, but I just got a Marshall DSL40. So it's a 112, but you know, for any kind of shows that I'm going to do, everybody mics everything now. So I don't need a 412.
Right.
And it gets the high gain stuff for me better when I'm at home. And there is a little bit of a difference. And then if you do something like a Fender style amp, that's going to be way different than either of those, which right. are more of a British style. So that's just one of the fun things about right. about electric guitar is there's so much you can do even by swapping out one component. You know, different vacuum right. tubes just completely yeah. changes the game.
Yes, that's the crazy part about this. I mean, it is a slippery, it is a rabbit hole, right? I mean, it just like you can change out the tiniest thing in anything, your amp, your pedals, anything, and just
or
make it sound
or the guitar itself. Right? Like yeah, with the right, video right. feed that we're on, I see a Stratocaster and a Les Paul. And I yes. mean you can make the comparison of Stevie Ray Vaughan or Jimi Hendrix for the Strat or Eric Clapton. Or right. and then someone like Slash or Angus Young on the Les Paul, right. and they're just two entirely different instruments yes. altogether. They sound entirely different. They even have different right. neck sizes.
Yeah, I know, actually
like the scale is different. Yeah,
no, it's noticeably. I played the Les Paul for the first time on Sunday with our worship team, and I had to play my pedal board completely differently. Like I compress yeah. a lot of the Strat sound, no compressor for the Les Paul, right? I like it didn't need it at all. Like the way I ran my drives were totally different. It was crazy. I had no idea it was going to be
quite
that different. You know what I mean?
But that's half the fun, right?
Yeah.
Well, what can I do now?
It is.
That's what keeps me in business is guys yeah, asking, right. well, I can do this thing, but I know I can do this other thing if I do whatever.
Yeah. Right.
So yeah. Yeah.
Well, let's talk business a little bit then. I find it super fascinating that you just picked up a DIY kit for a pedal and started soldering and yeah. just like built a business on it. What the heck was that process like for you?
Well, YouTube is a great resource. I basically do almost everything myself. The only thing that I don't do is I don't design my own circuit boards. I have a guy, Kyle Daly. He's turned into a good friend of mine. And he's just a wizard at laying out circuit board stuff. So
yeah,
I let him do that.
Okay.
Just because he's so good at it. And then I don't print the pedals myself. I do screen print the nose stuff because it's all pretty inexpensive, like $30 expression pedals. Westminster right. is all UV printed. And my friend Ben Horton down in Atlanta normally makes cornhole boards for a living, but he will use the same UV printer on my pedals. The rest of it is all me. Like I powder coat in my laundry room.
Do you really?
Yeah. So like I've got two air compressors and all that set up in there with toaster ovens to cure the stuff.
For real?
And wow. Yeah. And you know, I'm low enough volume that I can get away with that still, sure. but yeah. you know, I'm still paying bills obviously, but you know, like I can just, you know, flip a switch, fill up an air compressor and go powder coat stuff whenever I need. And it's that's awesome. Amazing. I don't have to order in bulk, right. from some of the more well-known parts suppliers stateside. I can just get the enclosures, the aluminum enclosures from right. China direct.
Yeah.
Drill it out, powder coat it, ship it off to get it UV printed, get it back and then just stuff it, you know?
Yeah. Right. So. That's interesting. So what is it like to sort of design and build like a new pedal? How does all that like go down? I mean, you're, yeah.
It is an interesting process. Every now and then I'll run across a schematic of something that I want to do. And then I'm like, I can make that better somehow. Or sometimes I'm just like, I want to do this concept. How do I make that happen? You know, there's so many different ways. You know, one of the good things is schematics themselves, like the actual routing of different components isn't protected by copyright. It's if I jack a schematic and the layout, then I'm in trouble. But that's how we have so many different variants of the Ibanez Tube Screamer, which is the most famous overdrive pedal. I mean, Stevie Ray Vaughan to Zakk Wylde, Randy Rhoads, everybody has used a Tube Screamer at some point. But
yeah, there's probably one on most every board in America,
or at least a variant,
some manifestation of it,
or at least a variant. Where I mean, I have my own, and this is where my nerdy side comes out with the theology stuff. So I know it's called Westminster effects, but I'm not Presbyterian. I'm actually a Credo Baptist. So the joke about my Tube Screamer variant is it's called the 1689. And the joke is that the 1689 takes something great, and makes it better.
So like Anabaptist movements off of the Reformation.
Well, no, I wouldn't say Anabaptist. Okay. I wouldn't claim that. I know a lot of the Southern Baptists will claim an Anabaptist heritage, but you got some pretty whacked out Anabaptists back in the day.
That's fair.
And if you don't believe me, look up the 2-part Sheologians episode where James White tells the story of Munster. And it's mind boggling how insane they got. Some of them got that was basically the cultish type of Anabaptist, where they pretty much took over the city of Munster and it was laid siege and all that kind of stuff. Like it's an absolutely amazing story. and it just keeps getting crazier. So, but no, more of the proper Reformed Baptist.
Okay, sure. I gotcha.
Yeah.
That's cool.
So I had a guy ask me one time, he's like, where's the 1646 pedal for the Westminster Confession? I was like, dude, you have the entire brand name. Like, give me a break.
Right. That is really interesting.
The main goal there is like, let's celebrate all of church history. So I've got stuff as far back as Augustine of Hippo referenced and as recent as John Piper. So.
Yeah,
for the record, John Piper does own a prototype Piper drive.
Does he really?
Yeah, he's actually originally from Greenville, and he was in town a few years ago for an event, and I gave him a prototype Piper drive this was when I was first starting, so the thing was ugly, but whatever, I was going to do it anyway, and he held it flat in his hands, and he went, I don't know what to do with this. That was his response. And I was like, well, if you ever learn how to play guitar, you can use that to change how it sounds, or you can use it as a paperweight. You know, you can do whatever you want with it.
So pretty sweet paperweight, right? I mean,
I do wonder what he did with it. I also wonder if it still works, because it was one of the very early builds, but that's neither here nor there.
That's really funny. I like that. So you have a degree in journalism, right?
Sure.
And you're now a pedal builder.
Yes.
Which seems like one does not
you
know, lead to the other one necessarily. How have you... Right. So how have you seen your degree sort of come in handy as a small business owner?
Yeah, it's mostly in communication skills. You know, coming up with product descriptions where I'm pretty much making dumb theology puns on all of them. Whether I'm just outright making a theology pun, or I'm taking a theologian's quote and altering it to fit the effect, it's just dumb. It really is just dumb. You know, but at the same time, like I can communicate these things because, you know, like I've interviewed, whether it's a football coach or a politician, like I've talked to people who, you know, who have different backgrounds and different occupations. So I'm able to boil down some of the concepts for, you know, maybe for a music store owner who doesn't really do a ton of pedals. I can say, well, this is kind of the big thing. You're going to move a lot of them. You know, it's also kind of played out in my own podcast. My very original major in college was radio. And I can multitask, but I can't multitask and talk. So that fell apart. Yeah. So I was like, well, I can write. I can do that pretty well. So yeah. So mainly the communication stuff and being able to, I don't like to, but I can cold call people if I have to. So
yeah,
the communication stuff is there.
I mean, how has there been a lot of that in building a business? I mean, I don't even know like where one starts off as a pedal builder, like sort of getting into the world of electric guitar.
Oh, sure. Like, I mean, the big thing is having a robust social media presence. You wouldn't believe how much of my business growth has come as a direct result of Instagram, where, I mean, you get some really? Of those really pretty looking pedal board setups. And those are often, unless it's like a really dumb meme, it's the rig picks that are always my best performing social media posts, where people people see, oh, well, he's running this thing into this other thing. And, oh, your thing is in there, so that's cool. And then he's doing these other things. I want that. And if this guy has these other pedals that sound really good and yours are in there, well, I guess it's good enough for me. And so that's been super helpful.
Right.
Yeah. And then stuff like, going to the NAMM show. I did my first NAMM show, like big NAMM show this, January in Anaheim. And then I did Summer NAMM in Nashville and being
able to, NAMM is just like a meeting of the guitar minds, right?
It's the music industry trade show. Think of any big name music company, whether you want to talk Gibson guitars or Steinway pianos, they have a setup at the big NAMM in Anaheim. Summer NAMM is Summer NAMM is kind of that industry throwing the Southeast a bone a little bit. It's nowhere near as big. So, Winter NAMM is about six times the size of Summer NAMM. I did not get to every booth. Like it wasn't even going to be possible.
Gosh.
I didn't even get to every booth on my floor.
Wow.
Yeah.
How many floors is it?
I think it's about three different levels. And, there's what? One level where your enormous brands like Fender and Gibson are going to have like, you know, 1500 square foot exhibits and crazy stuff like that.
Right.
At Summer NAMM, like everything's super accessible. Whereas, you know, for example, I was talking to Simon at G7th Capos. I met him at Summer NAMM and he came by my booth and we were talking for a minute. He gave me one of their brand new capos, which is really cool. Everybody should go check it out with the adaptive radius technology. Like it's amazing. But
that's sweet.
But it is pretty funny because it's just so old hat to him where he's done this stuff before. And he's like, yeah, I got to go downstairs now. Ed Sheeran's here. And then, you know, you walk by guys like John Petrucci, Victor Wooten did a Q&A, Mick Thompson of Slipknot. I'm not a Slipknot fan, but he walked right by my booth wearing his Slipknot mask. No less. Yeah. Yeah. So it's like all these huge names just kind of hanging out in Anaheim and, yeah, it's just enormous and weird.
That's crazy, man.
Yeah. So yeah, that's like being able to talk to a retailer from Germany or the UK, or I think I talked to a guy from Finland, and I did just nail down last month my very first international dealer in Sweden.
For real?
So that was pretty sweet.
Dude, that's awesome. Yeah. Oh my
God. And to make it even better, anybody who has seen the movie This is Spinal Tap, their store is called These Go to 11.
Oh, for real?
So, yeah. So how amazing of a guitar store name is that? Like, that's just perfection.
That is perfection. I only want to shop there now.
Yeah. When I got that email, I was like, I want to be in your store. Right.
That's perfect. I love that. Oh my gosh. Well, that's cool. Thanks for delving into that.
Absolutely.
A little bit. I really enjoy hearing about all that sort of stuff because it feels like God never sets you on the path that you really think you're going to go down. Like,
seriously.
I really talked to somebody that's like, I went to school for this, I got this degree, and now I'm doing this, and you know, this is the rest of my life. You know, it's always like, man, the surprises and the, you know,
yeah,
it's cool.
if you want to talk providence and sovereignty and all that kind of stuff, I mean, my life is a testament to that, where I, you know, being a Southern dude, I never thought that, one, I would be married to a chick from New York, she'll give me crap for that later. But, you know, so she moves down here. We meet. I dump a girlfriend for her, et cetera. And then we get married. And then, you know, less than a year into that, I'm starting this business that I literally never thought that I would be even in the music industry in the first place, making a living, much less actually building the gear. Right. it's just mind boggling really to think about.
Yeah. Yeah. No, yeah, totally. Yeah. Right there with you. So, so let's talk a little bit theology then. How did you get into all of this theology stuff? And then let's just riff.
Dude, you know? Absolutely. Absolutely. This is where I really have fun. growing up in the Church of Christ, I technically grew up in a quote unquote liberal Church of Christ because we had a playground and a kitchen.
That's what I was going to ask, because the conservative Church of Christ can get very conservative.
Yeah, right? Yeah. And I know some people around here still who are in some of those more conservative, quote unquote. And there's a lot of legalism, and that's not to rip on anybody in the Church of Christ, but there is a lot of legalism. Right. They do believe in baptismal regeneration, in that you are saved when you are dunked. Not
fully immersed.
Yeah. And not in the same way that Lutherans believe it. I know that they believe that to an extent, but it's not the same. It's more of a, right. it's closer to a, to use the technical term, it's closer to a Pelagian style of you have to utilize your totally free will that really hasn't been corrupted, whatever. At the same time, I know that there are people in the Church of Christ that do love Jesus. So I kind of see it the same way I see the Roman Catholic Church, where there's a lot of really messed up stuff being taught, but there are some of God's people in there somewhere. So, I mean, I'm not holding anything against anybody. So don't hear me say that. Right. I know it's really easy for someone who comes from a church background to sound like all they're trying to do is rip on people. That's not my goal here. Not at all.
Right.
That was my background. Still even being in a quote unquote legal or liberal Church of Christ, there's still a lot of legalism.
Sure.
There are people in that church that think I'm going to hell now because I play guitar in church.
Wow.
So being exposed to different thoughts in middle and high school and college, kind of opened me up to, there really is consistency in the way that these people are interpreting the Bible and all that kind of stuff. And so the way I got into more Reformed theology was I was exposed to Mark Driscoll before he burned down his church. and I was just like, I had the same reaction that so many had of, man, this guy says what's up. And he's not taking any crap from anybody, and he's going to tell you exactly what he thinks, and he doesn't really care if he wounds you so long as he gets the truth across. And now we can debate over his current trajectory and all that kind of stuff, but that kind of spoke to me. And then I read Desiring God by John Piper, and I was like, I can't get away from these truths. And so that resulted in a. One, I'm a nerd, and I like knowing way too much about things in the first place.
Yes. So, I'm a nerd too. So, yeah, so, yeah, welcome to the club, man.
Yeah. So whether it's guitar or I'm a lifelong Atlanta Braves fan, I'm an assistant baseball coach at my old high school. If I get into something, I get into something. What else is there in this realm? So that led to.
Right.
Looking up Spurgeon, you know, getting into stuff from Ligonier Ministries with R.C. Sproul, Steve Lawson, et cetera. Just all kind of those resources. And being in the internet age, that it's all super easy to come across now, whether you want to talk about, you know, somebody as who, I mean, James White is a brilliant guy, but he's not at the Piper or Sproul level. He's probably a tier below that, where maybe 20 years ago I'd have to really work to find that. But now it's just like, as long as I like something on Instagram that's relatively similar, he'll pop up in my feed and I'll hear about him. And then I can go benefit from those resources. So we rip on social media a lot, and there's a lot of things that are awful about social media, but at the same time, it's such a it's such a great way to spread the gospel, spread better doctrine, and say, hey, this guy's over here, go listen to him,
right?
Go read this book,
yeah,
or what have you. Like, I'll do that every now and then, like, hey, I finished this book, go read right. it. Yeah. And you know, when you put out like that you're interested in these things, you'll end up finding Facebook groups and other guys who are into that, who will encourage you and such.
Right.
And yeah. I mean, that's even, you know, the internet's even how we found our church. And I did some Google foo. So yeah, internet's awesome.
Yeah. Well, and even primary sources, like you talk about the, you know, reading up on historical theology. I mean, if something's out of copyright or was never copywritten, I mean, you can find PDFs
yeah.
all over the internet, right? There's no need to, you know, buy primary sources necessarily. You just go.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. There's so many free PDF copies of stuff or even yeah. not even PDF. Like if you want to talk like apostolic fathers, like Polycarp or Ignatius, yeah. Due right. to many of them, at least, who actually knew an apostle like John or Paul yeah. or whoever.
Right.
And so you can yeah. go and see like, oh, Polycarp probably hung out with John and he's saying the same stuff we are today. What is this?
Isn't that mind boggling?
There's really almost no reason for a modern Christian to be shaky in his faith with all the information that we have that goes so close to when the events actually happened. That might be yeah. a little too broad brush to say, because I'm sure that there's some valid reasons for some people to doubt. So I'm not knocking people who yeah. do run across doubts. But in terms of like the scholarship and the intellect and did this actually happen? I mean, there's like a guy that was writing a day after. So,
yeah, right. Yeah, it's true. You can see that, you know, apostolic, you know, coming from the original apostles, right? I mean, on down. And yeah, it's cool.
Oh, yeah.
It's good stuff. Sweet. So let's talk a little bit about the podcast then. You're a fellow podcaster. I love it. So
bless our
chat
hearts.
About the podcast. Yeah, right.
As we say us? In the South. Yeah. So the Westminster Effects Doxology podcast, I mean, obviously it exists to kind of self-promote a little bit. But it's if we can connect something to worship leading at all, we'll talk about it. And it involves my pastor, Bradley Cox, at Resurrection Church in Greer, South Carolina. So we actually, our end is typically recorded in his office. And for the last month or so, Luther and John in Nebraska hasn't been on because of some work stuff okay. and some scheduling conflicts. But we also have John on there. And he has a lot of my stuff. Got to know him through some of the worship guitar Facebook groups. There you go. It's Facebook groups benefiting people. And, and you know, when there would be theology debates, we'd often be on the same side saying, what's wrong with you people, like R.C. Okay. Sproul did a couple of years ago, and just kind of connected. And so it's basically three dudes who want to usher people into be more serious about their faith, like read the Bible, read the freaking Bible. And let's compare what maybe modern churches are doing, whether it's a practice or a teaching, with what does the Bible say? What is, you know, it's like what Jesus told the Pharisees when they were challenging him. He's like, have you not read? And of course he was talking about the Old Testament. So Jesus didn't unhitch from the Old Testament, by the way, but just as a little cheap shot there. But I mean, we'll talk about literally anything we connect to worship leading. So we just, the episode we just recorded addressed some comments Matt Walsh made about how when he's in the political arena, he's not anchoring any of his arguments to scripture. And it's like, well, ultimately for the Christian, everything is a theological issue because God has spoken right. to it in one way or another. And that would include how he's to be worshiped. We've talked about, you know, maybe tests of fellowship, you know, with the social justice thing going on, even got into, like, I don't want to step on any toes, but like with the guys that Francis Chan is hanging out with a little bit, and how he was attempting to clarify some things. And we were like, hey, it's okay to not have every single answer right now. Let it play out. Like, we don't have to, you know, condemn somebody immediately when they're friends with somebody. It's okay to let it play out. Right. But then there's other times, maybe you do need to put a foot down and say, no, dude, what are you doing? And so, you know, whether it's whether it's who should be a worship leader or should we listen to this guy? And then some of my favorite episodes are when we will pick apart song lyrics. So we'll just go through and read the lyrics to a modern worship song and say, all right, what do we like? What do we not like? And should we sing this in church? And sometimes the answer is, this is all really good. Sometimes is, oh, this is kind of a dumpster fire. I don't know what they're talking about here. But it's a helpful exercise. What we're trying to do there is don't just play the song, sit down and read the lyrics and see if they're true. And celebrate the truth of what you're singing, because what you're singing matters. It's not just Jesus is my boyfriend type of stuff.
And I think that's important. I think we don't do enough of that, like really listening to what the lyrics are saying and like, and then filtering that through theology. Right.
Absolutely. And there are some songs, you know, like I'm not advocating right now that you should or shouldn't play songs from X, Y, or Z group. Like that's not my point right now, but there are even songs where somebody could write it and mean something completely different than someone who has sound doctrine can mean when they sing it. Like I won't even reference any songs, but you know, with people who lean more word of faith, like they can say, I will declare your glory or something like that. And mean something entirely different than someone who comes from a reformed understanding.
Yeah, right. That makes sense. Yeah.
So that's like all of that stuff is worth considering. Right. So if your congregation is thoroughly grounded, maybe you can sing it. But if your church is coming out of maybe a certain movement that you're trying to distance yourself from, maybe you don't. And so you gotta maybe need to use some discernment with that, you know? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we often want, and I want, like I'm a rule follower. I like black and white. Like even recording my own podcast has kind of opened me up to, well, maybe there's some wiggle room here and there.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's worth talking about, you know, obviously if God says A, then A,
right.
But if God isn't as clear on something, then maybe 8.5.
Yeah.
to cross up alphabets and numbers.
Yeah. Well, and I think to that point, we have the community of Christ,
exactly.
Right?
Like, yes.
The Holy Spirit, like within us all. And so it's this, you know, coming together and how do we interpret this? And then we have 2000 years of church history of the same thing, right? Which is why it's important to have a grasp on any of that stuff.
Yeah. And I'm really glad you brought up we have the church to kind of, it's, you know, we're supposed to be submissive under elders and holding each other accountable. So we had a very cool moment in church this Sunday where, so our lead pastor Bradley preaches in a segment of Romans 8 about how we're, by the power of the Spirit, we're able to kill sin as opposed to nurturing it. And so after we play our final song, our associate pastor Keith, who is known for being pretty blunt, like if he feels like he needs to do something, he's just going to do it. And instead of the announcements, he gets up there and he's like, all right, look, I got to be honest. Statistics say that 90% of you dudes are struggling with porn or lust. So we're going to play that song again and we're going to kill this sin. And if you need to come forward and get prayed for, we're going to do that right now. And like 40 guys come up and you know, obviously, you know, there's going to be at least a guy who only did that because he had an emotional response. But at the same time, you've got these people bringing their sin into the light. And so there's accountability there. Like we can pick each other up and say, hey man, that was awesome that you came forward. How can I support you in that? Like instead of just hiding in shame, we can do the same thing with our doctrine and our music and how we worship is, hey, let's talk about it. And instead of getting all uptight and emotional about it, let's try and be as objective as possible. Look at what God has said in the proper context and go from there.
Yeah.
And we'll all be better off for it. It'll be iron sharpening iron.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's interesting. I also think, though, that there's this place where the emotional side of us, which God created, and this, you know, rational side of us that God created can sort of come together.
Absolutely.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's where you're at with worship, music, and theology, right? I mean, it's this emotional, more emotional.
You have to have both left and right brain involved. And that's kind of where I get most of my pushback, is most musicians tend to be more right brained. And I get that. We need both types of people in the body. There's different body parts that make up the body, whether you want to talk about eyes or hearts or brains or even kidneys that help filter stuff out. And you can keep going and make it as ridiculous as you want. But but we have different people with different giftings, and we need them all. We need the people who are more prone to emotional responses. We need people who are balanced. We need people who are more prone to straight intellectualism, and they can all balance each other out and hold each other accountable.
Yeah. Where and have grace for one another.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, my personality type is going to have maybe more of an intellectual arrogance that needs to be checked, where, you know, the fact that, I mean, I am kind of spoiled in that when if I'm just stuffing circuit boards, I'm listening to podcasts all day. So I can ingest all of this information, where, you know, maybe I need to have a little more grace for someone with a 1-year-old who kept them up all night, and now they have to go to their 9-to-5 factory job. And maybe they were literally too exhausted to crack open their Bible. Now, I'm still going to push them to read their Bible more often than they may be right now. But at the same time, I can be more understanding, while they can push more.
Right.
You know?
Yeah, totally.
So that's just the great thing about the body, is
the body, man.
Yeah. Different parts pushing each other toward Jesus, right?
Yeah. All is one. It's a beautiful thing that God has created, even though it's all.
Oh, yeah.
Doesn't always look that pretty all the time.
It's a mess sometimes. It's a mess.
It's still beautiful. So it's good.
Sometimes it's good. we have digestive problems and
heartburn. You know what happens, right? Bad. The eyes go crazy.
Freaking
out on you.
Tell me about it.
Right. Sweet. Well, dude, this has been fun. Let's jump into our final two questions as we sort of wrap up.
Yes.
Here. Does that work for you?
By all means.
All right. So my first question is, what is the strangest job that you have ever had?
I'm going to have to go with lifeguarding at the country club down the road.
Okay.
Where there was a time before they did a lot of remodeling where the Greer Country Club had more of the emphasis on country than on club. And it was kind of ghetto, honestly. And so it wasn't your typical lifeguarding job. It wasn't like they stick you up in a stand and take it super seriously. The only reason I was there was insurance purposes. And they're like, yeah, you can read or whatever. So I read the first two Lord of the Rings books over the course of one summer. Like, they really did not care as long as nobody died.
Wow.
And there was one night where somebody broke in to the to all the chemicals and dumped literally everything that they had into the pool.
What?
And which also involves some quick-set concrete, but all of the chlorine was spiked at like a 12 or some nonsense like that. Literally every chemical. And so that was a little adventure getting all that cleaned up, but
crazy.
And you know, there's, you know, you get stories of, yeah, somebody broke into the carts and started cutting donuts in the fairway and stuff like that. It was interesting. I literally serve no purpose except insurance purposes.
Well, you know, sometimes just looking good doing what you're doing.
And I got paid. I don't know if I look good doing it, but I made it work. So
sweet. So my final question then is, what is one piece of advice you would give to somebody looking to bring the kingdom of God more into their work?
Man, that's a huge question. And I'm the kingdom of God into their work is do everything to the glory of God, which means doing everything with excellence as well as you can. Yeah. Martin Luther said once, the Christian shoemaker doesn't so much glorify God by putting little crosses on every shoe, but by making really nice shoes.
Man,
so
yes.
So I know I violate that a little bit with Westminster Effects, because I'm directly referencing theologians and creeds and councils and stuff like that. But my goal is to make the best dang guitar pedal that I am capable of.
Sure.
Some days it's not very good and I have to take a return and fix something. Right. But most of the time it's let's not necessarily take a shortcut just for the sake of a shortcut. If it makes me more efficient and actually improves the product, then yeah, let's do that. But let's not just cheap out for the sake of cheaping out. Let's go make a good product. Let's stand by it. And let's make sure people get their money's worth, because this stuff costs people's hard-earned money. I know when, you know, if I go buy something, we were talking before, you know, we're in the market for a new car for my wife because hers just died. If I drive a car off of the lot and it dies 5 minutes down the road, I'm going to be pretty irritated.
Right.
And the same thing is true if somebody buys one of my pedals and it craps out on them, God forbid, in the middle of a set, which has happened before.
Oh, man.
And I'm always really apologetic about that. That's only happened a time or two, but it has happened. Or even I've had it happen before where they literally pull it out of the box and it doesn't work when I tested it here and it did work. So, you know, it's do everything to the glory of God, do everything with excellence, and give as much grace as you can within customer service. Because there are some customers who don't deserve any grace, like the rest of us. But at the same time, it will test your patience, and you're just going to have to own the fact that you screwed something up. And doing that, simply owning the fact that, man, I did something that wasn't the best, my best effort, or maybe I just overlooked something. People respect that.
Yeah.
And I've actually gotten a couple of repeat customers because I own something.
Wow. Yeah. That's perfect, man. That's great advice. I appreciate that. So thanks a ton for coming on, man.
Hopefully that helps people not to run their businesses into the ground.
Yes, very much so. Do it all for the glory of God. Be a great business owner, right? And love people. So I love it.
Which is hard. It's difficult sometimes.
Very, very much so. Very much so. So, all right. Thanks, man. It's so good to meet you and talk guitars. And buddy. We'll talk to you soon, I'm sure.
Sounds awesome. Thanks a lot.
See you, man. Well, I hope you enjoyed hearing from Cody, and I hope you enjoyed this little look into worship electric guitar. It is a very interesting world. Even if you don't do anything around that or in the worship team, just delving into his website and some of what he's going on, some of his podcasts, I just encourage you to check it out. I think it's really fascinating stuff. I think it's good, and I think it's something we could all, you know, lean into, just like understanding more about worship and theology and why we sing the songs that we sing. I think it's good stuff. So yeah, do all that. Next week is episode 50. It's also the 1 year anniversary of A Theology of Hustle, which is mind-boggling to me. I cannot believe it. So what I'm going to do is I'm bringing it back to the first episode, and I'm going to have JJ, my wife, come on and interview me and just sort of recap the year and sort of what I've gained out of this year. And make sure you check out that episode. It's going to be awesome. I cannot wait. And here's to 50 more, y'all. So thanks for all the support. And until next time, get out there and hustle.